Welcome again to the Ask Beatie Show. And isn't that absolutely the truth? Whether or not you're a Beatle, whether or not you are rich or poor or black or white or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or gay or straight or trans and or queer, we certainly all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And, you know, one of the things that I hope that you take in every single week here on the Ask Beatie Show is that if you find that you are on a merry-go-round ride or a roller coaster ride, and those are not fun rides, that you really and truly give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. Because you know what? We do not need to navigate this really crazy, crazy, challenging world on our own. Because when you think about it, you know, if we want to have some help with what kind of a computer should we buy or what type of credit card or cell phone, we do. We give ourselves permission. We go on the internet. We Google. We try to do a lot of research, and yet when it comes to our mental health, particularly in this country, I think that people are still very, very reluctant to reach out and ask for help. And if you're looking at what is going on mental health-wise in the United States, for example, there are 16 million adults in the USA, and I think that that number is probably really, really low, who are suffering from true clinical depression. And 40 million adults are also dealing and suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. That's one in five Americans. And what about the substance abuse? Do you know what? We are being prescribed so many pills from our doctors. There's over-the-counter prescription medication and prescription medication. I mean, I have a patient right now. She is bipolar. Her bipolar medication, fortunately, is really on track. And over and above the couple of pills that she takes, her psychiatrist has willingly prescribed an additional 10 different kinds of pills, including, believe it or not, 4 different sleeping medications. And I've been trying for the last couple of years. I mean, she is level. She's actually in a healthy relationship for the first time, probably in her life. And I've actually been trying to get her to change doctors. And yet, you know, they have this codependent relationship. And I can't even imagine why he would be okay continuing to just overprescribe all of this medication. But what about the fact that you're noticing and your friends are noticing and your family is noticing that you're just drinking too much, and you keep saying, well, tomorrow I can stop? And currently I have a patient, actually a new patient, and she says, I'll have 2 or 3 glasses of wine every single night. And I'll say to her, well, is it 2? Is it 3? And she says, well, look, I have a very demanding job on Wall Street. I don't have a relationship, and it is my comfort food to be able to get together with my friends after work and have 2 or 3, but it really isn't 2 or 3. It's oftentimes 3 or 4 or even more, or even a whole bottle of wine. And what is that about? Well, she's depressed, and I think that she hasn't realized the effects, the depressant effects of alcohol. So again, you know, we have the 12-step programs, we have counseling services, we have private practitioners. So that if you're really, really not happy with the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships, I think at some point in our lives, we have to be honest with ourselves and say, look, we are having difficulty navigating all of this on our own. And it is not a weakness. It is a strength. You know, I was saying to my guests before the show is that I've been having some issues with my tennis serve. Now, I'm a competitive tennis player. I was number 10 in Canada as a junior. And I depend on Gary every Monday and Thursday morning to be able to give me some coaching, so that we all need coaching, so that I hope that you're really able to take this in. And what about your relationship? How are things really and truly going? Well, as you probably know, if you've been listening to the Ask Beatty Show, in fact, today is the 270th Ask Beatty Show on this particular network, and the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. And people are surprised to hear that the divorce rate for second marriages is 63%. So what have we learned from marriage number one to marriage number two? But then what about our third marriages? Well, that number is 72%. So we go from one to the other, to the other, to the other. And I think it's very, very easy for all of us to blame everybody, to blame our partners. And yet what I have discovered over the years, that there are really three things that we have to do, not just think about, not just read about, but that we have to put it into action, that if we ever want to have a successful relationship with anyone. And the first thing, of course, is that each of us, we need to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we have to be serious about dealing with our depression, our anxiety, our early child sexual abuse, the fact that we grew up in a really unhappy, perhaps abusive family. And people say, well, that happened a long time ago and we can't change history. And that's true. It may have happened a long time ago. And it is true that we cannot, unfortunately, change our history. But what I have found over the years is that with really good therapy, not bandage therapy, not just behavioral therapy, not just cognitive behavioral therapy, that there is a way to help people really emotionally work through what happened and what didn't happen, so that they're finally able, and nothing is perfect, and we cannot ever forget what happened in our past, but we are then able to really live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present, so that we actually do need to deal as best as we can with what I call our skeletons in the closet and our unfinished business when it comes to our relationships. Again, three women are killed every single day in the United States. So this is not to blame anybody, not the women, not the men, but we have some work that we need to do. And secondly, you know, what I have found is that the majority of people simply really do not know the ingredients that go into a healthy relationship. And if you were not fortunate enough to witness it in your family of origin, and many, many people did not, you know, we're really left to our own devices to figure this out. You know, I was a speaker at the Left Forum here in New York City over the weekend. My panel was sex, sexy, patriarchy, and feminism. And I was telling a story to a group of people, you know, who were in attendance about, you know, the confusion about what's healthy and what's not healthy. And I was treating a woman in Sarasota, Florida. She arrived. She was beautiful and educated and lovely and smart. And she'd been married for a long, long time. And she said, I have a fabulous, fabulous husband and a fabulous lifestyle, but he hits me on occasion. He said, he hits you on occasion, and you're telling me this is a fabulous husband and a fabulous life. Well, as I began to ask her questions about her early life, and this probably is not going to surprise any of you in the least. This is a woman who was hit every single day during her childhood by her mom and by her stepfather. So in her way of viewing what was okay, being hit only occasionally was not such a bad thing, all right? And in fact, it was a lot better than being hit every day. And she needed to realize that being hit even once, that was never, never okay. And she got to a point, and it was just great because her husband was the CEO of a major, major financial institution. And we read about him every day in the papers and saw his pictures, and we brought him into the office. And she was finally able to get to a point and say, it is never going to happen again. And if you ever touch me, I don't care whether you've had too many martinis or whatever it is that you've done or not done, we are going to end our marriage. And this was somebody who was really, really serious about doing the work. And this did not happen overnight. And none of this happens overnight. And as I say to new patients, this is not going to be a tea party. We're not just here to have fun. We're here really to work. And of course, the third thing, and you've heard me talk about this a lot, is my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And then I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, Connecticut area. And I came up with a formula. And people who know me, they know I'm very bottom line, very pragmatic. It's not just psychobabble. And this formula, which has been used by thousands and thousands of people around the world, really teaches all of us how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. I mean, we assess everything in our life, our phones, our computers, our houses, our mortgage rates. And this is the same kind of mindset that we really do need to bring into our relationships. And the beauty of all of this is that you really feel empowered. You get educated. You are empowered because you know exactly what's going on. And ultimately, you are safe. And I think that is exactly what we want to be. We want to be safe. We want to be happy. We want to have a healthy relationship. And surprisingly, and people who know me know that I'm extremely impatient in my personal life, very patient in my professional life, is that my research found is that it actually takes close to a year to find out who somebody is and somebody isn't. And before I did the research, I would meet somebody and I'd say, oh, this person was so nice and so kind and so honest. I mean, I would never, ever, ever make that kind of a comment today. The best that I could say is I've met somebody who really appears to be kind and honest and wonderful and terrific. And ultimately, you've got to play it out just like the points in a tennis match until you get to the end of the match. And then you are going to find out. You're going to find out in a very, very detailed way who your partner is and who your partner is not. And then ultimately, you're going to have to decide, what do I want in a relationship? What do I not want in a relationship? And of course, the third thing is to really describe your relationship. And I want you to know that we all have to make compromises of various different kinds, but there are certain things that are absolutely, in my opinion, not compromisable. Great communication, great problem-solving skills, chemistry, although if you're not interested in sex, then maybe that is a non-issue, but certainly chemistry is important for the majority of people, and you should never compromise on abuse of any kind, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse. And if you're willing to do the work, it's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing what you can come up with. And hopefully, if you're really interested in finding a wonderful, healthy, loving relationship, whether you find the person online, on one of the dating sites, or in a mosque, or in a church, or in a synagogue, you're going to be emotionally and intellectually very, very well equipped to do what is in your best interest. Well, before I introduce my guest, I want to tell you about an article that I read in the New York Times. And this was an article that was written by Nona Willis Aronovich. And she is a colleague. She is a wonderful, smart young woman. And she was talking about radical feminists' views of men. And the article was entitled, "Don't Let Sex Distract You from the Revolution." And these were some of the quotes in her article. "Is love standing in the way of a feminist future? How to date men when you hate men? Radicals made compelling arguments about the destructive, distracting, frankly dangerous power of romance and men. We shouldn't be sidetracked by sex, which was inconvenient, time-consuming, energy-draining, and irrelevant. Romantic love is a problem, too," according to Ty Grace Atkinson, who is a radical feminist. And it went on and on and on. "Heterosexual love is you too tied to marriage and societal expectations of what it meant to be feminine. Romance is a cultural tool of male power. And frankly, I am so sick of all this male bashing." And I hear this all the time. "They're no good men. All men are like Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump." Well, all men are not like Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump. And there are a lot of terrific, terrific menshy men out there. And I think that we need to stop this. I think that we need to stop taking this paintbrush and painting all men in the most negative of ways. Well, last weekend, there was an article in Psychology Today, which is how I found my guest. And the article was entitled "Sex Power. People cheat not only for sex, but also for passion to feel alive and be wanted. And now it's women's turn to unleash all of this." Well, so I decided that I was going to call the two men who were mentioned in the article last week, Bob Dobrish, who is a New York divorce attorney, was my guest. And today, it is absolutely my pleasure to have Dr. Norman Wylog, and I'm so happy that you're here. Thank you. And Dr. Wylog is a practicing psychoanalyst with over 50 years of experience, and his specialties include corporate stress, post-traumatic stress, and those issues driving people to overeat. He is particularly interested in the effects of divorce on men, particularly in long-term marriages. And in the article, it talked about the shifting dynamics of desire in a time of changing gender roles that are creating a hell of a lot of psychic upheaval. Some of it shows up in the offices of New York divorce attorney Robert Dobrish, and even more of it winds up at the doorstep of my guest, New York psychoanalyst Norman Wylog, both of whom spend a lot of time helping clients contend with the consequences of affairs. And both report that they are seeing a new phenomenon: men who fully participate in a marriage and child rearing, even sacrificing their own successful careers to be stay-at-home dads when their wives out-team them, but whose wife then has an affair and seeks divorce along with custody of the kids. So look at what is going on, Dr. Wylog. Welcome again.
Thank you,
Robin. So we're seeing changes. It used to only be, right, that the man was having the extramarital affair.
Well, it also used to be that the woman was the main patient.
True.
And now I'm seeing more and more men in my practice. As I was seeing them individually, I became aware
of a problem that they were all expressing. That was the breakup of the marriage without them realizing the marriage was in trouble. And with that in mind, I began to start groups of divorced and separated men. And I found that there were two groups. One group was where the husband had lost his job, and because of that, he stayed home while his wife continued to work, and he stayed with the children. In the second group, the husband decided to stay home because the wife was the major breadwinner. It was a joint decision, and they both agreed that that's how they would live their life. In that second case, the husbands had no idea the marriage was in trouble. They thought they were doing what the wife had decided they should do. They were happy with their new role. And then they found out the wife was having an affair, and then they found out that the wife had, in fact, called a divorce lawyer, and now they're facing divorce. In this divorce, they're also facing loss of their home because they have to move out. They have no job. They have no security. And they fear losing contact with the children who they have been with 9 to 5 every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a very, very sad situation.
And I'm sure that in working with them, you've asked them, you know, whether or not it was really and truly their experience that things were really on track. Because you know how sometimes it appears to be, and people act, and we can all be performers at different points in our lives. But these men really believed that the couple was okay.
I really find that difficult, but I do ask them repeatedly, and they say to me, they thought the marriage was in trouble. I mean, I'm sorry, they thought the marriage was not in trouble. Had they not seen some text messages accidentally, they would never have known the wife was, in fact, talking to divorce lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
One patient said as recently as a month before they were looking to move to the suburbs. So he had no idea what was going on.
You know what? I was just thinking about something. When you talked about the two groups, the men who lost their jobs, I mean, that was devastating for them. And, of course, it was devastating for their wives and for the family. Did this group of men have a situation where their wives were having extramarital affairs more frequently than the men who they at least assumed that in discussions with their wives that it was really going to be beneficial to the couple, to the family, to everybody, for the wives to be the primary breadwinners? Was there a difference?
It's an interesting question. I think what happened in the second group, when the wife was more successful,
mm-hmm.
that as she began working outside, and as the husband stayed home, the dynamics of the marriage changed. The balance in the marriage changed. Unfortunately, it was a very unconscious kind of shifting, and mm-hmm. they weren't aware of what was going on until it was too late. The husband she married, the strong man who went to work every day, who was the CEO, was no longer doing that.
Right.
She was now the CEO of a company, and it was very, very different.
Right, because in the article, one of the quotes was, whatever she found exciting, as you say, about the man she married,
yes,
no longer existed. It wasn't sexy to come home and watch your husband cleaning the dishes, perhaps, or cleaning the kitchen, even though that is exactly what you were hoping that he was going to do.
That's exactly right. And when she came home, the dishes were clean, and the house was clean, and he had prepared dinner, and the children were bathed,
yeah.
And she was not happy with that, although she never verbalized it.
Uh-huh.
And that's the important thing. It was not verbalized.
Exactly.
It was a very internal kind of conflict she was having. She wasn't happy.
Yeah, yeah. Because as the article went on to state, it said that women have been wanting men to be more emotionally engaged, more vulnerable, to lead with their hearts, and to be involved with their children. But yet, many, many women find it difficult when they are the ones providing for the man, and that they're scared the male vulnerability.
The problem is that as the woman has become more independent,
right,
she was not prepared for the man to be more dependent on her and to be more vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
And this is what threw her off.
And instead, of course, of maybe being aware of it or talking about it, and I would bet that sexually things really changed in these relationships. Now, I don't know whether or not that's something that has come up in the group.
Believe me, I'm trained as a Freudian. I ask all the time. And sometimes they say yes. Sometimes they say no. Sometimes the men say they were so tired after working all day with the children and cleaning the house.
Sounds like the women.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. Yes. But so how are these men dealing with this? I mean, it was so, as you say, it was so sudden.
You know what? When it first happened, they were traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And we could call it a post-traumatic stress.
Sure.
They had no idea what hit them.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I would see them individually. And most of them resisted coming into a group because they didn't want to share their problems.
Of course.
And they didn't think anyone else had the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
Putting them in a group made them realize they weren't alone. And that's the most important thing. There were other men experiencing the same kind of traumas, the same kind of stresses. They're not used to talking about it. Women talk more about their issues. Women call friends. Women go to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Men don't do that. So for the first time, these men would sit down and talk about what's going on. From week to week, I was never sure if they would even come back because they would reveal too much. And then they'd pull back, and I would say to myself, I wonder if they'll come back. But yes, they all come back, and it's ongoing, and I couldn't be happier.
And I'm sure they couldn't be happier
they
as
could
well
not be
to
happier.
Have that kind of support and to be working with you. I'm curious about the age range of the men who are in this group.
Between 30 and 40.
Uh-huh, so they're young men.
Yep.
They're very young
And they men. Have young children.
Mm-hmm.
I think the oldest has a 16-year-old,
mm-hmm.
But most of them have young children.
Now, hopefully, the wives, along with the husbands, have agreed that they wanted to divorce well or not?
Not.
Not!
Absolutely not.
Wow!
Absolutely not.
So what do you think that's about? They're getting the kids. They have their extramarital affair. I mean, 50% in the state of New York. You know, Bob was saying that's just the way it is. In terms of finances, financial distribution.
Yeah, but these husbands feel they want to live where they're living.
Mm-hmm.
They want to continue raising the children,
mm-hmm.
and now the wives say no, move out and get a job, and we don't want to give you. Alimony,
mm-hmm.
which is what these husbands want till they get a job.
Are they going to be able to get alimony under the law?
It's very difficult because the dads are not taken as seriously as women in court.
True.
And so now they're being really victimized, and it's very hard for them. And the men are programmed to think that they can't care as well for the children as women can.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to court, that's reinforced by the judges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terribly unfair.
So they're going to lose. They're going to lose, certainly, sole custody. I mean, they're not going to have sole custody.
They'll never have sole custody, no.
They may or may not be receiving some child support or alimony, or maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have no job, they have no home, they're losing the very strong bonding they've had with their children, and
mm-hmm.
they're lost souls.
And they must be furious.
They're more frightened right now. The fury was when they first got to me.
Mm-hmm.
We've sort of worked through the anger, and now there's real fear. What will happen to them? What will become of them?
Mm-hmm.
They've lived very comfortable lives up until now, and now what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they have good lawyers.
They do, and it's costing every penny they have to get divorced. And each week it's more and more. And it's really unfair.
And the wives are not interested in mediation. They're not interested.
No.
So these wives, and this is why, as a woman, I wonder, why are these wives so furious at their husbands? Why do they want to not only divorce them? I mean, everybody has a right to say, listen, I don't love you anymore, and I want to end the marriage. But why do they want to destroy their husbands? And that's something that we may never know.
We may never know. But, you know, in our society, we still grow up so that the fathers are the breadwinners and the mothers are the nurturers.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Even when we try to switch roles, it doesn't work. And the woman begins to resent being the breadwinner.
Right.
And that resentment turns to anger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm finding more and more.
You know, Esther Perel, she says something, you know, very, very interesting in this piece. She says, the women start to wonder, as they've asked for, you know, full participation on the home front from their husbands, but that they start to ask themselves, who will be the sturdy one for me? Where's my rock? I'm providing for everybody. Will he be able to withstand the force of my desire if I perceive him as needing emotional caretaking? I can't enter myself and let go. So the role that they have been cast for is not the one society auditioned them for.
Which is exactly what I said.
It's exactly what you said. And I think that we're going through such changes, I mean, across the board and certainly in our relationships. And I hear this all the time where women are saying, I wish he was more involved.
Yes.
I wish he was this. And, you get what you want, and then you don't
want
it.
That's exactly right.
And you don't want it.
Well, you know, it's not that you don't want it. You don't know what to do with it.
Right.
It's a whole new concept. And these men are perfectly capable of being good providers. They have to be taken seriously, and they're really good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage them to start dating, and they say to me, how can we date? We have no job. We have no home. We don't know what our future is. As soon as they have a date and the woman says, how are you? It's all going to spill out.
And what do you do?
And what do you do?
And what do you do?
And they say to me, we can't date till some of this is settled.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very lonely. And they're very isolated. And that's why the group is so important. It gives them at least a chance to socialize with other men.
No, exactly. Now, when did you begin the group? How long ago? How many years have you been running this type of group for?
It started out accidentally.
It did?
Yeah. As I said, I had several patients
who
were in the process of getting divorced or getting separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, let me put them in a group and see what happens. And then I started the group, and then I got a call for someone else to come in and someone else to come in. And that's how it started. And then it was picked up, you're looking at that, by Divorcify.
Yes.
And I got some referrals that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been ongoing.
Uh-huh.
I try to keep it about eight in a group.
And these men meet with you on a weekly basis?
Weekly, yes. The group we're talking about meets every Wednesday, which is interesting. It was difficult to start the Wednesday group because Wednesday is the night most fathers spend with their children.
Exactly.
But somehow the men in my group have rearranged the schedules so that they can make the group, which is also very interesting.
No, it's a lifesaver. You know, over the weekend, I was looking at some suicide statistics, and I'm sure you're very familiar with these statistics. In 2017, men died by suicide 3.54 times more than women. White males accounted for 69.67% of suicide deaths in 2017, and the rate of suicide is highest in middle-aged white men in particular, which is hopefully none of your patients are going to commit suicide. But this age group, this is a very, very vulnerable age group, you know. And I think a lot of people are surprised that the male suicide rate is so high. And I do. I agree with you. I mean, that the changes, the transformations, I mean, things are very, very confusing to say the least, right? For both men and women.
For both men and women.
Yes.
You talked about the percentage of divorces. I have the same numbers that you had.
Right.
Excuse me. One of the reasons for the high percentages, especially with the second and third marriage, is that you don't really understand why the marriages are failing.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a repetition compulsion.
Yes.
You have a compulsion to repeat the same neurotic patterns again and again and again.
Exactly.
So you go from your first marriage to your second marriage to your third marriage, not resolving any issues.
Right.
And you tend to find the same wife the second time and the third time.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's funny that you say this. I hosted a call-in counseling radio talk show in Rhode Island, and a man calls me up and he said, "Beanie," he said, "I've been married three times. The first one was a blonde. The second one was a brunette. And the third one was a redhead. And I might as well have stayed with the first one because the dynamics," I mean, he didn't use that word, "the dynamics were absolutely identical."
But maybe the second and third wife dyed her hair, so they were all originally the same color.
Maybe. Maybe. But it's so true what you're saying, that we do. We tend to repeat over and over and over unless we are willing to stop and be serious, to take a look at what is my role.
Yes.
In why things are not working out. And it is just so easy, as you know. We blame everybody. We blame our parents. We blame the society. We blame climate change, which is real, of course. We blame everything without stopping to take a look at, you know, me. You know, what is it about me? And that's such hard work to do. Have these men in the group, even though they were blindsided, all right, have they done, and I'm sure with you they probably are doing it or have done it, some serious introspective work on themselves? What is it? What was it maybe about me in some fashion, way, my choice, what I did, what I didn't do, that may have contributed to the demise of the marriage?
Well, yes. The majority of the men are, I should say, controlling men, and they have a need to control. So it was very comfortable for them to assume the role of staying home, making sure the children ate properly, dressed properly, did everything. They were very happy that the wife left them to do these things.
They were happy. Even the ones that lost their jobs.
Well, that's a little different. I mean, they would rather have been working.
Sure.
That's a different category.
Right.
So one category, they were forced into this position. Second category, they chose it. And there's a difference.
Definitely.
Yeah. The men who chose to stay home are the controlling men. They didn't like the wife making decisions. And what they said to me was they thought the wife didn't like making the decisions. Even though they were very successful on the outside.
Right.
When it came to the house, you take care of it. It's okay. You can do it. And they thought they were doing what their wives wanted.
Were these long marriages?
Yes. Yeah.
They were.
Oh, yeah. Well, not all of them. I have to think. The majority were. One or two were very short-lived.
And were the affairs long-standing?
No.
They were not?
No, absolutely not.
So they were relatively recent affairs. So that there was something, okay, at that point in time for the women, and what was going on or not going on in the relationship.
The women want to feel desired. They want to feel alive. And the affair did that for them. For some reason, it wasn't happening at home, but it was happening on the outside.
Right.
Being desired, as you well know, is one of the most important forces. And these women felt desired.
Look, we know, you know, just as married people, you've been married for
very long,
52 years,
51 you know, years,
which is just so wonderful, which is really so wonderful. And I've been married. I'm actually newly married. I married my childhood sweetheart just 3 years ago. So we're very lucky to be in wonderful, wonderful partnerships. But the reality is, and I look at my daughter Jordana, who has a almost 2-year-old little boy and is married and is juggling a million different kinds of things, work and the baby and a husband and finances. It's so difficult to keep that sizzle. In fact, there was an article that I wrote recently on how to keep the sizzle in your sex life. And, it's very easy to just write out all the different things that we can do. But life is tough. It's tough, especially when there are young children, to be able to keep the romance and the sizzle and to pay the bills and to do all the mundane things that we have to do. That's just real life. It's tough to do. And yet I think we all have to do a better job. And I've been saying this for years, to try to keep the couple in your sex life at the top of the list of priorities. And it's not an easy thing to do.
I think the trick is to keep a balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Freud talked about that, and I talk about it. By a balance, he meant love and work.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So that takes care of everything. If you can keep that balance, chances are you'll be successful.
But people are not keeping the balance at all.
That's the problem.
I mean, I'll wake up in the morning and, I've said to Jim, the phones, they need to go. They need to go out of the bedroom, out of the living room at a certain time. But I'll wake up in the morning and I'll see emails that have been sent to me. People are up at 3 o'clock in the morning. People are working nonstop, nonstop. And I always felt and feel that it's so important to have a beginning of the workday, an end of the workday, and that includes dealing with children, where you're then able to take a breath, take a bath, take a shower, and reconnect or connect with your partner.
No, I get the same thing. I wake up in the morning and look at my phone, and there are messages from patients at 3 a.m, 4 a.m,
exactly,
5 a.m.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking, what are they doing sending me messages at those hours?
They're lonely.
Yeah.
I guess that's really it. And yet couples, I think that, I was discussing this with my husband over the weekend, that it's so easy to become bored and boring in the beginning, right? We're dating. We want to look beautiful. We want to be in shape. We want to do all these wonderful things. And people tend to become very, very complacent. And what I see wearing my sex therapy hat is that sex so frequently is just, it's just cast away. I mean, when I was working and I had my private practice in Sarasota, I can't tell you how many couples, young couples in their 30s and 40s and 50s, had sexless marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were there because of extramarital affairs, as it so happened. So it's a juggling act. And I wonder with the men in your group, what their sex lives were like throughout the period prior to their wives going out and having extramarital affairs?
I think it varied. Some of them talk about having an adequate and satisfying sex life. Some of them say that prior to the marriage falling apart, there was no sex life.
Mm-hmm.
So it does vary. But I wanted to talk for a second to some of the men out there who are now facing being with the children more and being frightened of it and not knowing how to be a full-time dad.
Mm-hmm.
And my message to them is the following. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. If you have children and you have them for the weekend or on Wednesdays or twice a week, set goals for yourself. Focus on what you want to do with them. It's learning on the job. Take the responsibility. It can be very empowering. Don't believe that men can't be good caretakers. You can be. And you love your children, and just be comfortable being with them.
Exactly. And if you're needing a little bit of extra help and a little bit of extra support, there's always Dr. Norman Wylock.
Thank you.
who they can call. But also there are our fathers groups. And I think that we have to be able to give men permission that it is also okay to ask for help, and that it is okay to try to connect emotionally, not just, on the baseball field, although that may be a really great initial way to connect. And talk to other fathers and talk to other men about, you know, life, about marriage, about parenting.
About feelings.
About feelings, yeah.
It's okay to express feelings.
Yeah. Isn't it something, you know, we're still talking about this all these years later. I mean, do you find, generally speaking, that men are able now to express themselves emotionally more than they did 10 years ago, 25 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
What was that Marlboro ad? You came a long way, baby?
Yes.
Well, we can say that to men now.
Right, right. Of course, the man in the Marlboro ad, I suspect he never talked about anything emotionally. He was busy with his Marlboro thing, you know, with his, with his cigarette. But no, it's...
I think, you know, going back to what I said, men have been programmed to think that they can't take as much care of children as the mothers can. And that's just not true.
No, absolutely.
It's not true.
No, I see some of the younger fathers. In fact, I look at my daughter's husband, who is just so, I mean, he is so emotionally and physically there for their mm-hmm. for their little boy. You know, I was visiting them a couple of weeks ago, and I was just marveling at how connected. I mean, it was just beautiful
yes.
to see that it was not just her job, you know, to change the diapers or to, you know, to feed the, you know, the little boy. And but we have to make it okay.
One of my patients, a male patient, just had a child 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I see him on Saturdays in my Scarsdale office. This past Saturday, he arrived with the infant.
See how terrific.
And I thought, wow, that's really something. I would never in a million years have done that. He came and he sat with the baby and he said his wife needed to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was terrific.
Absolutely. So hopefully his marriage is not going to end up in the same way.
I don't think it will.
You know, as the men in your group. So do people, this is really one of the primary reasons why I wanted to meet you and I wanted you to come on the show. How do people really find out about you and the group and
I'm listed in Psychology Today.
Right.
And that's probably the best place to find me. And then they refer it on to me. So if you call through Psychology Today, they then call me and I connect with you.
Did a lot of people, including practitioners like myself, read the article and then contact you?
Well, as I said, when you called me, before I even realized the article was out.
Uh-huh.
So the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Now that it's out, I've been getting calls.
I would think so, because you said that, as far as you know, you were the only person in New York City who is running, a group like this specifically for men.
And I didn't know that either. I recently found that out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that's true, but there doesn't seem to be a group for men involved in divorce or separation.
You know, when you think about it, I mean, that is so, it's so strange and is so absolutely needed. I think that with, you know, the Me Too movement, which is great, and the Time's Up movement, which mm-hmm. is great, I think that we are so, so focused on women and our issues and our needs and
That's
our
right.
upsets and our concerns that men have really been put on the back burner.
Especially divorced men.
Mm-hmm.
Especially divorced men. They come home to a lonely house. Some men are living in the basement now of their parents' house because they can't afford a home.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really getting shafted.
Yeah. And how are they, I mean, other than working with you, how are they going about reconstructing a new life for themselves?
Most of them say they can't think of reconstructing until the divorce is final.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold back until all the pegs are in place. And I understand that. They
mm-hmm.
they want to have a new home. They want to know when they're seeing the children. They need some structure in their lives. Right now, their lives are very unstructured, and it's very stressful for them.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that money now is a huge problem.
Oh, it's very, very bad. Every penny they've had has gone to the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really upset about that. And although many of the men in the group have tried to settle and tried to go to arbitration, the wives don't want to do it.
I wonder why. I wonder why. Since the law is so clear, I mean, as far as the money goes, the distribution of money, it's 50-50. There's nothing to talk about. I mean, this is a no-fault. As far as the custody and as far as the visitation and as far as alimony, those are the things that are sort of up to negotiation.
That's right.
And it's so unfortunate that they are spending, and for some reason, these women are out to get their husbands. And that's where I have to wonder what else was going on or not going on before the affair. I mean, if these women, you know, okay, if they had wonderful marriages, let's say things were good, things were copacetic, and the wife, for all the reasons that we were, you know, mentioning, decided that she was going to have an affair. Okay, it wasn't exciting enough. She didn't want to come home to a husband that was more like a wife. All right, we understand all of that, but why the vindictiveness? Why the vindictiveness?
Because I think on an unconscious level, the women still want to be taken care of. And when a husband decides, they decide as a couple that he would stay home, she's not being taken care of. Mm-hmm. A daddy is not taking care of her.
So she said yes when she meant no, or she thought it was going to be yes, and then it turned no, and they never talked about it.
And they never talked about it. And you know what? It's her fault, too. She never expressed the anger. She never said, This is not working out the way I thought it was.
Right.
We need to renegotiate.
Exactly.
Not one couple renegotiated.
Mm-hmm. How many couples renegotiate anything? Well, you know, when there are problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people, and this is why, you know, when my book initially came out, you know, people would say, so what do you think are the most important ingredients that make or break marriages and relationships? And I'd start off and I'd say, this is not sexy, but it is emotional communication and problem solving. How many people are able to sit down and say, listen, darling, this is really not working. We need to talk. I feel this. I feel that. We need a new agenda. We need a new redesign. I mean, people...
Yeah, not one group member has said to me, my wife came home and said, we need to renegotiate, or I don't like this
the deal.
Never.
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 Uh-huh.
So the husbands thought, well, the deal is working, and I like staying home with the children,
right,
and I'll wait till the children get older, and then I'll go back to work. However, now they're being thrown out into the marketplace, and there's no jobs for them. And this is something else they didn't bargain for. They go for a job and they've been out 5 years, 6 years.
Right.
They can't get hired.
Yeah.
Because anything they apply for, they say, oh, you're much more advanced. And they're having a lot of trouble. And it's very frightening.
Mm-hmm. So over and above the emotional challenges, I mean, are real pragmatic. How are we going to live? How are we going to pay the rent?
That's right.
Or pay a mortgage? And how that is going to be impacting the children. You know, you wonder. You know, here are these mothers, you know, who are basically throwing out their husbands. And, I mean, gosh, don't people think about what is the emotional impact going to be on our children?
There is always an impact.
Always.
Look for it in school.
Mm-hmm.
Look for it in sleeping patterns. Look for it in eating patterns. Any change in behavior, look for it.
You know, exactly. And you wonder what is really going on inside these women's heads. You know, the vindictiveness, the harm, actually, that they are doing to their children. Let's say they hate their husbands. They don't want to have anything to do with them. But to be causing this kind of dislocation, physical dislocation, emotional mm-hmm. dislocation, you know, one really needs to wonder, you know, what's with these women? Do they give you any insight at all? Are they with their lovers? Are they, have they had a breakdown? I mean, what's going on with the women?
The men don't know.
They don't know.
And I don't, if they don't know, I don't know.
No, for sure. No, for sure. For sure.
But we'll find out. We'll find out.
You know, I'm sure that you definitely will. You know what? I'm just looking. My producer is telling me that we have 3 minutes. How is this possible? That the time is... I can't believe it. It's almost 4 o'clock. So much to talk about. But for people who want to reach Dr. Norman Wylog, they can go to your website.
Uh-huh.
And it's W-Y-L-O-G-E. And you are clearly a man. You know, I rarely have guests. And the people who I have on my show, I want them to be able to give my audience something really, really special, which you have.
Thank you.
And when I talked to you on the phone and when I read, you know, some of the things that you had to say in the article, I assumed that you were going to be exactly who you really seem to be, which is just such a really experienced, good, honest clinician who's doing, you know, some really wonderful, wonderful things for a group that's pretty disenfranchised when you think about it, right?
That's right.
I mean, they really, really are. So again, for people who want to reach Dr. Norman Wylog, you can go to his website. His office number is 914-659-3191. So, another hour has come and gone on the Ask BD show, and I want to, as always, thank all of you so much for listening and tuning in and sending me tweets and emails. And, you know, for those of you who were not able to listen to the show live, you can go to Ask BD Podbeam. We have an archive section on the Progressive Radio Network, and I will send you the link tomorrow so that you are going to be able to listen to this show, and you'll be able to use the link in whatever way that you want to. And so there we have it, another wonderful, wonderful, informative discussion.